Access number 27803, Mr. Vic Stone, Reel 12. Now, when did you, we've got to the point where, when did you meet your pilot again? Because this it sounds like an intriguing meeting. Was that when you got back to Rivenhall?
Yes. Tell us. He was still at Rivenhall, you see. He's still in the squadron. He's still flying at Rivenhall. And we arranged, and the gunner, you see. But now, when we did come home...
Now your pilot's name was...
Finlay. So when we came home, my sister actually said to me, she said, I suppose it's the second or third day home, I don't know, but she said, Paddy came here to see Mum and Dad and said to them that he didn't give the order to abandon aircraft. He said, abandon aircraft, prepare to abandon aircraft. We shouldn't have jumped. Now, he went to Butch's parents in Kent, and he told them the same. I don't think he went to Jack's because he didn't know where Jack was living at the time, because Jack was living in Birmingham, and he'd recently moved to Ilford. I think that was the reason. Anyway, he said he didn't give the order, abandon aircraft. He said, prepare to. He said, we didn't have to burn out. When we went down to see him, we went, I think it was in White Hart in Kelvedon, we went, not Kelvedon, Witton.
While you were...
This is during, I don't know when it was, it's sometime during the leave before we came in. Not long after we came home, this must have been in the beginning of June, I would say. And we arranged to go down there to the pub there, and we booked in for the night. I think Paddy booked in for the night as well. I know Jack came down with his wife. And all the crew, we met there, and we sat talking during this, I think we met lunchtime. And after lunch, we sat talking there. And the first question to Paddy is, how did you get back, Paddy? And he said, I didn't have any problems. He said, no problems at all. Why did you tell us to... He said, I didn't say that. So we said, well, now, if you didn't say that, why did you watch four of us go out the aircraft? You must have known that we got out. But of course he didn't know what to say. I can't remember what he said, but there was no answer to it, was there? You see, no reason at all. So then we said to Bill, now Bill, you stayed in the turret. So he said, yes. So we said, now, why is it you didn't bail out with us? So he said, I didn't hear Paddy say anything at all. So I know, I heard nothing at all, he said. So we said to Paddy, well, Paddy said, the first thing I knew, he said, that you'd gone out, Bill said to me over the intercom, the chutes have gone, Paddy. And he said, I thought that Bill meant that all the stuff that should have been pushed out had gone out, and I thought Bill meant they were the chutes. When he said the chutes are gone, I thought he meant all the equipment we were carrying was pushed out. I didn't know it was you had gone. So we said, now, Paddy, how can you possibly... I mean, you can visualise, can't you? The pilot sits there. The navigator comes up, taps him on the shoulder, says, cheer old boy, goes back, goes out the aircraft. And then I go past and say cheerio to him. And then Jack and Butch obviously did the same. And he says he didn't know we'd gone out. Well, now, that to me is an impossibility.
So you just didn't believe him?
Well, no, you couldn't, could you? I mean, I can't see how anybody could believe him, really.
So what do you think was the explanation? Or do you have you never been able to fathom it?
Well, this is what we can't find out. You see...
His report says nothing at all.
I went to Q and looked in there. Well, now, if you go and look in these reports in Q, it tells you... you look at this, first of all, you look at the squadron to find out what reports you want. And then you look at the crews. You look down the pilot's name and it tells you there. And it gives you the type of aircraft, you see. Well, now, it should say Stirling, Mark 4, EP, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, crew. Flying Officer Finlay, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, Vic Snow, so-and-so. Destination, so-and-so-and-so-and-so. Report, and then you get the report there, you know, about bad weather, couldn't see the target, couldn't do this, couldn't do that, came back, no flak seen, didn't see any aircraft, didn't pass over any. There's a whole lot of things to answer for. Well, now I had a look, and it just said on there, flying officer Finley and the crew returned, four crew missing, that's all it said. Well, you see now, when you come back from anybody will tell you, you go to a lot of people, when you come back, you go to debriefing, and they ask you at debriefing, well, how did the mission go? And you tell them, you see? And, you saw Paddy's report there, didn't you? Hey? There's something crossed out there, I don't know what that is. But he said DR could see no so-and-so through 1010 cloud. But we didn't have anybody aboard. And I mean, how he says DR, he didn't have anybody aboard.
That's dispatcher.
Yeah, dispatch runner, yeah. See, I've thought 101 different things, Peter, but I shall never, ever fathom it out, because there's been no inquiry about it at all. I mean, he would have to account for four people being... I mean, just can't come back from an operation, say, oh, four crew are missing, that's it. You've got to give an account of what happened. Why are four crew missing? What happened to them? Eh? And, you know, Butch and I used to talk. We never used to talk much to Jack, because Jack's not interested. I mean, if you talk to him, he'd say, oh, I don't know about that, mate. Oh, yeah, could be. I don't know, you know, this sort of thing all the time. And I don't have much to do with him, because at Christmas time I send him a card and I phone him up once in a year. But he just doesn't want to know. Never wanted to know. No, he said, I don't worry. He said, no, don't worry me, he said.
So you've never resolved this?
No, I've tried so many different people. I've tried museums in Norway to see if I can find information on why. There's two people now in Norway, and they are trying to trace anybody who's at the dropping zone on that particular night, or any relatives, where we should have been, you see, because I knew the dropping zone, I've given it all to them. And anybody in the area who would know of this operation on that particular night, could be their grandfather or father or somebody, you see. And they are still making inquiries, but they said they can't do much at the moment because, you know, they can't go and see them, because travelling up north now in Norway is a bit snowed under.
Now the next thing, we just get you settled back into your post-war career and see how you... now, what did you come back and do? I mean, you've been demobilised in January. What did you go? You were a butcher.
A butcher. I went back to butchery.
Was that your career?
I went into butchery, no, and I stayed in butchery until 1948. And in 1948, I got married. Well, in butchery at that time, where I was working, there's 11 employees. And... I said to the governor, I'm getting married, I should need more money. And he said, I'm ever so sorry, Vic. He said, really? He said, because he said, if I give you some more money, I've got to give all the others a rise. And he said, as you know, meat is rationed. And I think it was still quite a tight ration. I think everybody's allowed about shillings worth a week or something. And he said, I can't sell any more meat. He said, I could sell more meat, I'll make more profit, I could give you more. He said, but I just can't do it. And I said, well, you know, I should have to leave. And he said, I'm sorry that you're going to go. But he said that's one of those things. So I left there and I went to work for the Prue. An agent. Yes, I had an agency on the Prue. And I stayed there until I retired in 1983.
That was your career?
That was my career, yes.
Now, did you have any effects of your wartime service, either physical or mental, relating to either... the stress of your flying or to being a prisoner of war?
No, I don't think... No, I used to have sometimes at night time, I used to have sort of strange, I suppose, dreams, I don't know. But I can't say it had any adverse effects on me, no.
No physical effects?
No. As I say, I was very bloated, but after a while, I think after about a couple of years, that went down, you know.
Now, what about your contacts with your old comrades? Are you in any of the associations?
Yes, I'm in the Aircrew Association.
Now, what does that do?
That's all members of Aircrew during the war, and it's an association they've formed. They meet once a month, and we have a chat amongst ourselves. And then over the past years, we would visit different airfields throughout the country. You know, we get invites from these. But as the years have gone by and the Air Force now has disbanded, there's nowhere to go. But we're all in our 80s now. Nearly everybody's got bad legs or hips. But we do have speakers come down and see us at times, you know. The most recent one we had was Peter Twin, I think it is. You maybe have heard of him. He was at Faden Boy, and he was on the Dresden raid. And he came down and he gave his opinion of the Dresden raid and the circumstances leading up to it, you know.
And are you a member of any other associations?
I belong to the British Legion, Royal British Legion.
What does that do for you?
That's been going for years, hasn't it? That's any member who's been in the services can join the British Legion. It's a social club and a club.
Do you use it as that, or are you just?
Well, I go there for dance now and again. Yes, I meet some friends there and you have a dance. Yes, I also belong to the Air Gunners Club, and we meet once a month at the Union Jack Club, Waterloo. Yes.
And what does the Air Gunners Association do?
As it says, all the air gunners, they all get together and they talk about their exploits and everything else, you know. Yes, yes. They have a magazine. And any events, you know, like the Poppy Day Appeals, and as church, they visit, not early in the year, they went to Buckingham Palace and they were invited there by the Queen to parties and to the cenotaph, and all these occasions, these memorial occasions, there's always invites put out to different members, you see. There's not a lot of invites put out, but different members, see, some members not capable to go. You see, now, I could have gone to the one at the cenotaph, but with this leg, I couldn't get up there, so I didn't go. Other than that, we go to the Air Force Officers Club in Park Lane about once every 2 or 3 months by invite. We get invited there and we go there and we have a lunch there. Other than that, we have our own meeting once a month at Brentwood. We have a social Christmas time once a month on a Tuesday. We all meet lunchtimes at a pub, different pub each month. And
this is your Air Crew Association?
Yes.
Is it important to you to keep up your contact? I mean, I know they're not your crew, although you did keep up contact with a couple of your crew.
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah.
But is it important to you to keep the old memories alive?
Oh, very, very important, yeah. Very, very much so, yeah. I think, you see, in my day and my age, we were very, very patriotic, And that is why, you know, it's like now the youngsters now, they don't worry about patriotism at all, do they? It's to them, it's nothing, you know. I think they're very rude, a lot of them, but it's just the society we live in now. We've got to accept it as it is, haven't we? Yeah.
Thank you very much. Mm.